Ladies and gentlemen, this is Kim Greenhouse. Welcome to It's Rainmaking Time. As most of you know, I'm still in Spain for a little while longer. I've met some wonderful people. And we haven't talked on the subject of clairvoyance or the supernatural for quite a long time. And I've met somebody here who has a very interesting mix of skills and abilities that are pretty remarkable. I have met very few people that have clairvoyance, clairaudience, and clairsentience that were accurate most of the time and who are responsible in the way that they delivered information to people about people. We're here in Spain with Sandy Camara, who's clairvoyant, clairaudient, clairsentient. She also does guided meditations. She does hypnosis and past life regressions, and she's quite good. We're going to open up the conversation here. We're here at her home in the Alicante province with her dog, Sophie, who you may hear chirping around like a bird. Welcome, Sandy Camara, to It's Rainmaking Time. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Kim. It's great to be here.
I really thought it was very interesting to talk to you about your work because I have found, while most of the psychics I've met really are dedicated to their work, in my experience, most of them are not accurate. And so having a session with you, I thought it was very interesting that how accurate you were. And therefore, I wanted to have a conversation about what it is that you're accessing when you're doing a reading. What is the realm about? Maybe you could educate the rest of us a bit. So first of all, tell us a little bit about you.
Well, basically, I've been able to do this since I was a kid. I didn't actually realize that other people couldn't do it. It's something, you know, when people ask me to explain what I do, I can't. It's something I've done ever since I've been a small child. I don't recognize that others can't. So it's difficult for me to say. How I kind of access information is sometimes it's said to me, just as if I'm talking to you here. It's just said clear as a bell. Sometimes I feel it. If somebody has an ailment or if something's going on, whether that's empathic skills or not, but I literally feel it. I feel what you feel. The clairvoyance thing is I get visions.
Do you mean vision or images?
I kind of think
pictures
it's, I kind of think it's both, because at times I will get it where I can describe places I've never been to and describe them very accurately. I can describe people I've never met. So those are actual visions, I would say. Like I'm actually seeing it. And then at other times, I will have images where it comes in bits and pieces. Let's say that I'm describing somebody and something to do with maybe their chest area or something like that. And I'll be telling someone I'm constantly drawn to their chest, or perhaps it's their eyes. And I'll be describing how they've got extremely thick lashes or dark lashes, something like that. Something significant about the person. But in those instances, I may not see the entire person. I just see specific things. So I think maybe it goes on both levels. When I'm saying about the images are describing at times events or people, places. Obviously, I'm not there. It's certainly not a remote viewing skill, although I can view it remotely, if that makes any sense.
That totally makes sense, and I appreciate you saying that, because there are some psychics walking around saying that they're remote viewers. And unless they've been formally trained for at least 5 days, they're not remote viewers. And it's a totally different skill, so I appreciate you making that distinction.
I may be able to see it from a remote distance, but I'm certainly not a remote viewer. So when I do get asked that question, I will always make it very clear. I'm not trained as a remote viewer. I don't even understand the skill set that I would need to have that, but I can see things on whatever level I do it, where I can see them accurately as if I'm actually standing there.
Talk to us about a couple analogies or some readings that you did that were highly accurate and were delivered at a time where that information was not available, something like that.
I would say one nobody could have guessed. I had a female come to me, and I think she had been sent to me more than she actually wanted to come. In other words, somebody said, oh, you have to go and see this lady. I'm not even too sure that she actually wanted a reading. She was so grumpy. She was just grumpy and folding her arms. So what had happened in that reading is we were talking about her finances and her business investments and stuff like that. And I had it come up strongly that she was buying a house. She verified that for me. And I told her, you're going to have something with financial issues. That house is going to fall through. You're not going to be able to get the house. However, I believed strongly that she would get a much larger house for less money than the slightly over a quarter million pounds that she was paying for that particular house. Also, I had felt strongly that her business partner was going to have to pull out. There was something going on where he needed to pull out. And I relayed this information to her, and she basically poo-pooed me and said, there's no way. My money is cash. We're buying a cash sale. The contracts are changing within 2 weeks. There's nothing that can happen to the sale of this house. And I said, okay, I'm taking that on board. However, I'm getting it very strongly that this house will fall through. It is to do with financial issues. You're going to have financial problems around this house. When it falls through, you will end up getting the much bigger house for less money, and your partner's going to pull out. You know, I said, you can take it on board or not. It's entirely up to you. Well, she left pretty disgruntled and unhappy with me. She came back approximately 6 weeks later. She tapped me on the shoulder and she said, do you remember me? And I thought to myself, oh gosh, how could I ever forget you? Anyway, turns out her money was in Northern Rock. And when Northern Rock collapsed, all the assets were frozen in the bank. She could not pay cash for the house she was about to purchase. It fell through. Because of the financial situation, the bank collapsed and all of the big banks were collapsing.
Must have been 2009 or 2008, something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, in around that time.
2009, August, September.
It was interesting that, okay, that happened. Then the housing prices plummeted because the banks had collapsed. So she ended up losing the house, as I told her. She was able to get a much bigger house for the same amount of money. Well, less money than she was going to spend on the original house. And it turned out that her brother was the business partner, and he had been found to have some heart problems, so wasn't going to be able to do the renovation work on the property after they purchased it. When we're getting into sometimes how much accuracy they do expect in a psychic to have. So this woman apologized profusely to me for being so rude to me. You know, it was like, that's amazing. How could you have got that? Nobody saw the banks collapsing. How would you have gotten that? I said, well, I just gave you what I got. And in the end, she'd had a little trip and fall. And she goes, well, you got all those things, but you didn't get me having a fall. And I just sort of smiled at her and said, well, you know, maybe spirit thought that losing over a quarter million was more important than a little bit of a fall. So sometimes I think it's, you know, it's like you can have such accurate information, but because it hasn't happened yet, people may not want to believe it from there.
Or accept it.
Or accept it at that point in time.
I mean, the other thing is, I suspect as a consumer that people expect a reader to know and say and be given all information about them. The client expected to be told about a slip and fall over the house that she was going to pay X amount of cash for was falling through and that she get a better deal. But it's a major thing since, you know, she thought her cash was going to be the key to the whole thing.
Sometimes I think that's what happens is they think that you know everything. And in reality, we don't. What we're often given is the most important aspects of something. Another interesting one I had is a younger woman who was married showed up. I had picked up that she was pregnant and she didn't look at all pregnant. Nobody knew. I'm not even sure she knew she was pregnant at the time. And I said, okay, it's going to be a boy. And approximately 9 months after this child is born, you will be pregnant again and you will have a girl. I'm not sure she loves me or hates me, but she has a beautiful son and she has a beautiful daughter.
Wow.
The husband came back to me and said, please, San, no more kids for a while.
That's great.
I was like, it's not me, dear.
Thanks for that. I wanted to give the audience a sense of how you pull it through. Let me ask you, how did you know that you had this ability and how do you know you can trust what you get?
How did I know I had the ability? I think I was probably maybe around 8 or 9 years old. I always thought that everybody did. I didn't really recognize that it wasn't something that other people didn't have. So I guess sometimes it's hard for me to describe what it would be like for a so-called quote-unquote normal person if it's never been part of my paradigm. One of my major awakenings was probably 8, 9, maybe 9, 10 years old tops. My grandmother had died, unbeknownst to my mother. And I came trundling into her room and I said, I'm very sorry, but Nanny cannot come to visit us. She's had to die. Well,
wow.
That didn't go over well. not well.
I'm sure. Now, where are you from?
Originally, I'm from England, and I've lived in Canada for a long time. Obviously, I'm in Spain now. I've traveled throughout the world, so I've done a little bit of traveling. So perhaps have a hybrid accent on me now.
So when you told your mother that her mother had passed on,
yes,
what did she say to you?
She shook me violently and told me I was a wicked, evil child, and how could I say such a thing about her mother? And she said to me that if her mother had actually died, that my uncle, her brother, would have called and told her. So I was making up stories and I got a beating for it.
Seriously?
Yes. 2 hours later, my uncle called. And pretty much the exact time that I had gone in the room, or moments before then, and said that my grandmother had died, my grandmother had passed away from a blood clot passing through her brain.
What did your mom tell you then?
She once again shook me violently and said, "How do you do this? How did you know? How did you know?" Scared the hell out of me. And I think that was sort of my first inkling that maybe I wasn't all that normal, or maybe I wasn't going to fit into the realms of normality.
What happened from there in terms of your awareness of this gift that you have?
I became very frightened and I stopped saying anything. Whatever I saw, I just wouldn't relay it. It was possibly a year or two later and my other grandmother died. And I remember my mom coming home because she had been visiting us in Canada and she died with blood clots going through her lungs. Seems to be a lot of blood-related problems in my family, apparently. My mom had come home and I remember sneaking out of bed and coming up to her and saying, "Please, mommy, don't be mad. Don't be mad. But Nanny Browning had to die. She's gone." And that time my mother received it a lot better. You know, she just broke down in tears and she was like, "I don't know what you do, but there's something about you, Zan. You do something unusual." I don't think my mom fully ever understood exactly what I could do. And to be truthful with you, Kim, I don't actually understand exactly what I can do. I just do it.
Let's talk about applications.
Okay.
Let's talk specifically in the clairvoyant, clairaudient, clairsentient realm and just describe what that is for the audience, please.
Okay. Clairvoyance basically means clear seeing. When I say I have visions or I get images or I can what I call tap in, which, you know, some psychics say is remote viewing, and I'm very adamant, no, it's not. That's clairvoyance. That's me seeing clearly. Clairaudience means I hear things, and I hear it the same way as if you're speaking to me. Clairsentience means I feel things. So I can feel your emotions. I can feel things going on with you, even like ailments. You know, I might be like, "Woo, you've got a really bad tummy ache. Please go away from me." I don't want that. It's back to you. You can keep it. So I can actually feel those kind of things. When I say also clairsentience, I guess that's also about being able to pick up the emotional tone of wherever I am. It can work for your benefit or not. Unfortunately, in my world, if somebody lies to me, I know. I may not be able to say exactly what they're lying about, but I know. I can feel it, as many other people can, but times it by 10. So I absolutely know something's not right. Clairaudience is being able to hear it. Clairsentience, being able to feel it. I can also quite often pick up on smells. Let's say somebody smoked a pipe, I'll be able to smell the tobacco or a certain scent that was connected with somebody that's passed over. I can pick that up.
So right now, what are the applications with respect to clairvoyance and this gift? What are people calling you for? I mean, we know the standard stuff that people call psychics for: love, money, stability. There's got to be something in the contractual realm. Should people do business with this person? Should this group do business with this other group? Compatibility, what else?
You've covered most of them. I have people come to me when they're, you know, not understanding what's going on in a relationship. Sometimes they're just curious, and it's often the ones that are curious that you unload something onto them that they're quite shocked and it comes to pass later on.
Can you talk a little bit more about that? Because a lot of times people will go to a psychic, and if the psychic is accurate and gives a translation of an upcoming event that's not favorable to the person, a lot of times someone will say, "Well, that's a bad psychic." because they've just brought me information I don't want to hear. Talk about that realm, because there seems to be a responsibility in translating what you're picking up and still delivering it to the consumer, right, who's looking for accurate information. But do a lot of clients really want accurate information?
No. I would say a lot of clients want the fairy tale version. And I explain to them, I don't sugarcoat, and I'll tell you what I get. I will do it in the kindest possible way. But if something comes up, also what I do too, though, Kim, is if I put something forth to somebody and I put it and I put it and they start pushing back on me, I will drop it. Because for whatever reason, that person's not ready to hear it. I think you have to have an ethic about you that says, if you're going to traumatize the person, back up. One instance in particular, I'm sure the person I read for will know if she hears this. Basically what happened is I was picking up strongly that her partner was cheating on her. She kept backing me up. And I just said, okay, what I have here is a female, buckets of water around her, buckets of tears around her. And she's stood there with her face in her hands, crying over what looks to be a sink or a cabinet kind of thing. And she said, oh, maybe it's my friend. She's been having troubles in her marriage. And I just thought, okay, I'm backing right out of this. I said, it could possibly be, you know, take it on board if you want. You don't have to. And then it went on to other things in the reading. And I think she basically thought, oh, this woman's crazy or whatever. She phoned me about, I don't know, maybe 2 months later. And she's like, oh my God, I finally recognized what you'd said. I was over the kitchen sink. My face was in my hands and I was crying buckets of tears because I just found out my husband had been having an affair for almost a year. So in that instance, as much as I got that information very sharply, I was trying to take a step back, still giving her the information, but doing it in such a way.
Not pushing.
Exactly. I was not going to push it on her.
How do you know, as somebody who's picking up the information, what to emphasize?
Usually it's whatever's given to me strongest.
And how do you get the feeling, or how do you get the issue of emphasis?
What will often happen to me is if somebody's not getting something or is something extremely important, it will keep on being repeated over and over and over and over until I give it off. And once I give it off and they can accept it, it'll be taken away from me. So if you can imagine somebody sitting beside you and constantly saying something over and over to you beside you, so you can actually hear this until the point you go, oh, for goodness sakes, fine, I'll give it off. Sometimes that happens with me with spirits too. Not so long ago, there was a man that came to visit me, and there was a little boy that he showed up with. This man didn't know exactly what I could do. So I thought, no, just shut your mouth. Just shut your mouth. Don't say a word. And this child was so persistent that finally I just had to say to this gentleman, look, can you place a young boy? I believe he passed from some sort of cancer or an illness that would have taken all of his hair away other than one little tuft. Him and the friend he came with sort of just sat there. And this was in a social setting. This wasn't where he'd come to me for a reading, but it was so persistent that I gave it forth. Once he got over the initial shock, I sort of gave him the rest of the information and it was all highly accurate. But for whatever reason, that little boy felt the need to be in contact with this gentleman that came to visit me. So I gave that off. And that's basically how I'll do it. If they don't stop, imagine somebody poking you, poking you, poking you, poking you until you finally give it off. So, that's the importance to them.
So what's the distinction between, I guess, receiving psychic input and mediumship in your experience or understanding?
In my understanding, the way that I know it's a spirit is because I will see them. Although, having said that, there are many times when I know there's a spirit around me and I can't exactly describe who it is, but I also know, I guess it's a feeling. I don't know how else to actually put it, but I know that that person's talking to me as opposed to I'm just picking the information. If it's a spirit that has come forth and stepped in really strongly, I will actually see that spirit the same way you would see
a person.
Me, yeah.
So you have a way through your faculty to distinguish the difference, yes?
Basically, yeah. I've never had any formal training or anything like that. So to make things easier on myself, because at first I couldn't tell if they were talking about or if I was dealing with a live person or someone that passed over. So I asked spirit, angels, whatever you want to call it. I said, look, if they're living, let them be in color. And if they're not, make them gray. because I couldn't tell.
Wow.
And they seem to be perfectly fine with that. So it's like, if you ever notice those pictures where it's like, it's all kind of like black and white, but there's a few bits of color.
Right.
That's how I see the spirits now. So I know they've passed over. And the people that are in living color, I know they're alive because they're in living color. But before I couldn't differentiate. Is it a spirit? Is it a real person? I don't know the difference. So when I ask them to do that and they seem to be happy to work with me like that, that's how I do it now.
What is a past life regression in terms of the way that you do it? First, could you explain what it is? And also, I want to stay with the past life regression to start to really give the frame of reference. And then how you work with people, because you're into hypnosis and you're able to do this. I mean, years ago, I had read Many Lives, Many Masters by Brian Weiss, who's considered one of the top people who are able to take people into a past life regression. He has years of waiting lists, and I think it's actually a rare thing where you have people that are able to do it well, and help the person access what they need to access. Why do people ask for a past life regression?
I would say there's many reasons. Sometimes what it is somebody feels extremely pulled to certain places. And when I say certain places, it's like, for whatever reason, you might feel compelled to go to Georgia for whatever reason. And yet you have no family there. There's no connection there. You don't understand it. So sometimes it's simply like that. There's been other times when people are looking to maybe spiritually develop and they want to know how their past lives have influenced who they are now. There's people that will come because they have some strange ailment that no amount of medical testing has been able to resolve.
Can you give an example of that so people understand?
Okay. I had a woman come to me, and when she first presented, she basically told me she was just interested in being more spiritually aware. When I'm working in different realms, I don't cross them over. So when I'm working as a past life regression therapist, I will not tell them that I'm also a psychic. It messes with their head a bit too much. So, you know, I just taking them at face value. And she'd come, and my spidey senses were saying, no, there's something else behind this. But I thought, let her be. And she'd come, and we put her through a couple of lives. And then she went through this one specific lifetime where her name, it's funny, I can't remember her real name, but I remember her past life name was Anna. What happens is I put them into alpha theta brain state, and then they can access these memories. Now, there's two streams of thought. One says, the spiritual side says it's our actual memories of past lives. The scientific thought field says whether or not it's past lives is irrelevant because we all have cellular memory. Our DNA is passed down through the generations. Therefore, the memories are stored in the DNA that's passed down. And that's actually what we're remembering. I don't think much matters. If it helps you, it helps you.
I agree with you. I think that's interesting.
So, you know, maybe for more scientific minds, that makes them feel more comfortable, and I'm okay with that. So this particular woman, Anna, she lived, I think it was in like late 1700s. And essentially what had happened is she lived to a very ripe old age. All her family had died. And in, you know, in that time frame, most people were dying when they were 50. This woman would have been living until she was into her 70s. Long story short, old slate floors at that time, uneven. She fell, she slipped, she hit her head. She would have bled out for days. So she never passed instantly. She would have been in a lot of pain, bled out, where she cracked her head open. And in this present lifetime, the female that I'd done that regression for had these strange headaches. She'd been for MRI, she'd been for CAT scans, she'd had x-rays. They had done everything because at first they thought it was a tumor, and nobody could figure out why these bizarre headaches were coming. And they were always on the one side of her head and not in any place that normal headaches would occur. So after we did the past life regression, there's a part of it when you see something like that, you go, okay, you need to leave that behind in your past. So I told her to leave it with Anna in that lifetime. It didn't belong to her. Do not bring it back into this lifetime. She came back and told me a few weeks later that since the regression, she never had another headache. Normal headaches, yes, but not this severe crippling pain that she had.
That's fantastic. How is it that the being is able in a regressed state to be given a instruction like that to leave it behind in the past life? what part of them is leaving it behind? Is it the subconscious?
Subconscious, absolutely. It's the subconscious mind, because it's like it's brought through, whether you want to say cellular memory or it's an actual memory that's still stored in their subconscious. So they've now experienced that past life, and I'm telling them, you know, I'm instructing them to leave it with her. It does not belong to you. Do not bring it into this lifetime. And it hits them on, they're already in theta, so it's going to hit them on that level anyway.
And describe theta for us, please.
There's basically, you know, set patterns of brainwaves. Our normal everyday brainwaves are beta brainwaves, and that's when we're fully awake and cognizant. Okay, the best way to describe it, you know the feeling just as you're about to fall asleep?
Yes.
And everything feels great in the bed and you're just about to drift off. That's actually when you're sliding into alpha theta brainwaves. So it's that where you feel like you're floating and everything like that. And then as we go where we're in deep, deep sleep, we're in delta, or if we're unconscious, we're in delta. So primarily to work in past life regression, I need them preferably further than alpha. I need them usually in theta to be able to really access a good past life regression.
Now, how did you learn to do that? Was it through learning hypnosis?
Through hypnosis, yes. And then, you know, obviously the skills I'd learned, I practiced on a few people, which probably may never forgive me.
They are now running around like monkeys, everybody. They think they're chimps.
Well, yeah. Okay, to be 100% honest here, what had happened?
No, you don't have to be. God help us all.
I had... you know, gotten into the past life regression, and it just fascinated me so much. And of course I wanted to go and practice on everybody, but I didn't know if something horrific, I hadn't taken the training up to the point where something horrific happened, you allow them to release it.
Uh-oh.
So this one fell from a great height and broke her legs, and she's actually knock-kneed now. And I should have actually, you know, having the knowledge I know now, I should have said, leave that behind. But I wasn't aware enough at that point. So yeah, some of my first practice sessions probably, I don't think they hate me, but you know, they're probably like, ooh, not so great. So yeah, it is learning trial and error. There's some people that work well with a specific type of regression. There's others you need to drop down deeper. You have to be able to be very fluid in your techniques. Not the same technique will not work for every single person. And you have to be able to change it.
If you would, I want to go back to what people can call you for in the area of hypnosis. It obviously has to be done in person, yes? You're not going to hypnotize somebody over Skype.
Theoretically, I could.
You mean you could do a past life regression under Skype? No, you'd have to have them in the room, wouldn't you?
As long as they can hear my voice. No, I don't need to be present with them. I would say as long as I can see them, because I'm looking for certain breathing pattern changes. I'm looking for rapid eye movements. I'm looking for certain things that are telling me how deep of a level. So theoretically, if they had a camera trained on them, I'd be okay to do it. I guess my worry would be, who knows who else they've got in that room if I can only see them? And I can only control one person at a time, really. I've had many people say, can I come in during the regression? And I'm like, well, if you do, and you go into trance and start experiencing your own past life regression, I cannot help you. So that's on you. And I really try to discourage them from it. I did a past life regression live on air on a radio show, and we could not do the induction because I didn't need 50,000 readers or listeners all going into trance on me, and I'd have no control. The operator, me, is basically there to guide. And during the regression, I'm constantly asking questions of that person so I can gauge where they're at, you know, if they've gone into something that's a little bit, I don't want to say frightening, but shall we say a little bit unexpected or slightly alarming. I have techniques where I can bring them up over it so they're viewing it from a third party perspective rather than right inside of it. And always keeping them at a safe distance. You can move them back and forth. You can jump them through the lives, different things like that. And one of the things I always tell everybody is, no matter what you tell me, I'm only going to let you go through two death scenes. Because whether or not we're looking at it and saying, yeah, but it wasn't really me, it was another lifetime, on a psychological level, it's still damaging to continually watch yourself die. So even though the death experience for anybody that goes through those is not, when they get to the other side, they're always like, I'm just so peaceful and I'm sad because I can see my family or whatever's happened to them. I just feel like it's so peaceful here. I don't want to come back. Nobody wants to come back. However, you know, for our day-to-day waking lives, walking around thinking of this death scene, that death, I don't think it's good for them psychologically to have death scene after death scene after death scene put upon them. So I only let them go through two.
By the way, I just wanted to tell you, and I wanted to tell people on air, she does great guided meditations. I went into, I don't know where I went. I don't think I've returned since that happened. I ended up in France on a road trip with my friend Simone, which you'll all be hearing about very shortly. Or if you haven't heard, by the time this is released, it'll be on. But we can attribute Sandy Camera to that. Yeah, no, I was left in a trance all the way to Marseille. No, that's not your fault. Okay.
Okay, I'll take the blame. What the heck?
So right now you're in Spain.
Yes.
You're doing psychic readings for people all over the world by Skype. And by phone.
Yes. Not usually so much by phone. I usually use chat mediums.
But you could by phone.
Oh, I can do them by phone. Yeah.
By phone or Skype.
Yeah. I've done them on the radio. The radio and the phone is the same thing. All you're locking onto is their voice. Face-to-face readings, I can obviously see them. But, you know, I mean, I've read for you. You know, I move around and I don't look at the person that I'm actually reading for. So sometimes I think I unnerve them when I do that.
It's quite a sight, everybody. Of course, you know I love the visuals. It's like somebody walking back and forth. I had this vision of like female Tesla doing the psychic reading, you know.
Thank you.
Walking back and forth.
And then when I do them on like any kind of chat medium, I just type to the person. And quite often I'll be typing as the information comes, it's flying fingers, just typing, typing, typing. And then I'll say, can you verify that for me, please? Is that correct? Does that fit for you? Does that make sense for you? And then more information. Same as what I did with you in a one-to-one reading where I just tell you, can you verify that? Can you, like when I came up with that, why am I getting the Daisy and the woman that had passed over? Her name was Daisy. And I asked for verification. And that's basically how I work, is I'll come up with the information and then say, can you understand that? Does that fit for you? Can you verify that for me? And then towards the end, I always say, is there anything you want to ask me?
Yeah. Very,
within
very
reasonable limits.
Architects for future creations. Hey, that's a good one. Well, is there anything else you'd like to tell the audience about either your work or psychic work in general or anything about hypnosis? Is there anything on the board of what you do and offer that you'd like the audience to know?
You know, when you're working with hypnosis, whether people recognize it or not, NLP is hypnosis. Creative visualization is hypnosis. Visualization practices, meditation, it's all a form of hypnosis. If you look up the definition of hypnosis, basically it means to go into a trance or a sleep. Okay, you're not actually sleeping. So when we meditate, we're accessing alpha and theta. When we do creative visualization, same thing. So all of these things are exactly the same thing. I just think sometimes people, when they hear the word hypnosis, they get negative connotations. I've actually had people come to me and ask me if I'm going to make them quack like a duck. And I say, well, what fun is that unless I follow you around after, you know?
Well, there used to be this wonderful hypnotist that would take people on stage in Los Angeles. I can't remember her last name. Pat. Oh, my God. I'm going blank. Anyway, when I was like 15 years old, she was big. And people would go quack like a duck. She'd have them do all kinds of funny things on stage. Maybe the audience went into trance, too. I'm surprised there wasn't like 50 to 100 ducks in the audience. But that's probably why people ask, because it's been used for entertainment purposes.
In those scenarios, though, what's actually happening with stage hypnosis is, I mean, if you think about before you were going, what did everybody say? Oh, it's going to be great. She's going to make us act like fools. Oh, this is good. You're already giving yourself a post-hypnotic suggestion that it's going to happen. You're already imprinting that seed that you're going to go do that. Oh, and I'll do something really outrageous. So what you've basically done is given yourself permission to act like a fool in front of a bunch of other people and blame it on the hypnosis. The kicker is we will not do anything under hypnosis that we are not capable of doing when we're fully cognizant.
You really think that?
Absolutely.
You're kidding.
No, absolutely.
Wow.
If we have a moral code that says no matter what, under any circumstances, I will not do X, hypnosis or not, we won't do it.
Is that known or is that your frame of reference?
That is within the hypnotherapy circles. That's well known. It's sort of like, you know, the person that says, well, I was drunk.
Okay. I got you.
You would never disclose major secrets to your hypnotherapist if you wouldn't do it in your waking life. You can't get them to divulge something that they wouldn't do anyway. You can sometimes help them access things that are buried, but you cannot. I mean, you hear people say, oh, well, they made me do this and they maybe. They can't make you do anything that you wouldn't normally do. When I say normally do, isn't within your psychological makeup to do. Unfortunately, what a lot of people don't want to recognize is we have a very dark shadow self. And part of that, we, you know, have you ever thought of really dark things to do when you're upset or, you know, in certain, everybody has, you know, that's part of our psyche. That's part of our makeup too. I'm not saying people, you can't hypnotize people and they're going to go run around killing people. That's not the kind of stuff I'm talking about. What I'm saying is that, you know, often we do not embrace our shadow self. We push it aside, but it's still within our psyche. Or maybe we don't want to face it or admit it. So no matter what you do under hypnosis, you're not going to be able to get somebody to do something that they would not do or is not part of their psychological makeup.
The thing I guess I question about this part is that I had heard and I had seen this documentary with the CIA about how people have been programmed or put into trance and created almost like a Manchurian candidate out of that. So I wonder how they're able to do stuff like that, or like they were able to torture people. I think it was like torture experiments. I saw this video how after they were put in trance, they were able to do this. Now, does that translate as that they have a higher capability and ability to do it than other people walking around? I don't know.
Could also be the wolf pack mentality on that one too, because there has also been experiments done where there's no hypnosis used and they will shock people almost to the point of where that person is dying and there's no hypnosis used. But it's crowd mentality or authoritarian mentality. I've been told to do this, so I must do this. And in a way, if somebody has told you to do something and you can now blame them, it's a way of us being able to maybe access a darker part of ourselves and not take responsibility for it.
Interesting.
I think with the military ops and, you know, military people, please don't come around me and shake me up over this. But my understanding is that it's not just hypnosis. They wouldn't just use straight hypnosis. There would be brainwashing techniques. There'd be a lot of other things that
right,
are going
implantations,
on top of that.
Yeah, okay.
So it wouldn't just be on that level.
Brainwave entrainment and the dark side. What is your biggest challenge in the business today that you see from a clientele perspective that you would like to see changed or different? Because you've worked internationally. You've been in Canada. You've been in the United Kingdom. You've been in Spain.
I would say sometimes I don't think people understand exactly what it is they want, or they seem to think that a psychic can be 100% accurate. If anybody tells you, oh, I'm going to get shot for this for sure. Anybody tells you they're 100% accurate, get your money and run the hell out of there. It's impossible. The top psychics in the world run approximately 85%. That's a 15% margin of error. So even if you're looking at 85 to 87% accuracy, phenomenal, phenomenal. A guess is 25%. So anybody who's running at 50% is doing damn good. You start getting up into the 70s and the 80s and you've got a remarkable psychic on your hands, they still have a margin of error.
Don't you find the margin of error also is timing?
It can be.
People can give right information, but the wrong timing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think sometimes the timing thing, especially if you're working on any kind of spiritual level, can also be with timing. Timing to a spirit is irrelevant. Soon. So we think soon. Okay, it's got to be in a few weeks if it's soon, right? Soon must mean a few weeks. Soon to them, if they've been passed over onto that side for 30 years, soon could be a year, 2 years. So I think timing is something that can be very, very difficult. And also sometimes you're given a time frame, but you're not sure what to lock it onto. So assumptions can be made.
I'm sure you're asked for timing on things or timing window, something.
I will try to do a timing window. And sometimes I will tell them point blank, I don't have that. What I have is this. I haven't heard anything where they're telling me it's going to happen in such and such a time frame. Now, at times I will get it where they'll give me a distinct time frame or a distinct month. If I don't have it, then it's not to be given. We're not magic eight balls. You don't roll us around and we go, yes, no, maybe. Human error is always going to step into it to some degree.
Okay.
And you'll never get away from that.
Let's talk a little bit about tarot.
Okay.
Now, years and years ago, there was a very renowned reader in the Valley named Tom Sexton in Los Angeles. Somebody took me there. I had to write my questions in an envelope, put it in the envelope, and he would sit there. And he would take out tarot cards, and he would start writing stuff down. And I said, oh, no, don't read tarot for me, because every deck looks different, and some decks look more frightening than others. And I didn't understand what he was doing. And he said, I'm using this to lock on to what's happening and what the questions are.
He would probably be somebody that works highly with symbolism. Tarot is just a tool. That's all it is. It is a way of focusing your energy, focusing your psychic abilities, however you want to call it. Or sometimes it's simply about if I use tarot cards, I will look at something and something will pop out of me off that card. And I'll go, oh, right. Okay. That's where I'm going with this. So for me, as you are aware, I will try to do a straight psychic link with you at first. So I'll just give you information. And then when I'm asking to do the tarot cards, it's sort of like I'm peeling back the layers. I'll get more information that way rather than just trying to
So it's not the main thing. It's an addendum.
For me, yes. I've also, you know, pulled a tarot card or an angel card and suddenly recognized, well, that's why I'm cold, because there's spirit around me. And somehow the card has been like, what jumps me to the spirit, if that makes any sense. To me, they're more of a focus tool. I think there's, you know, we need to differentiate here. There's cartomancy, which is just straight learning the meaning of the cards and memorizing them. Now, that's cartomancy. There's no psychic abilities involved in it. You are literally reading the cards. And then you get into where a psychic is maybe using a card to help them jump forth or bring forth more information or pull their focus in a different direction. Some mediums actually can use the cards to hone in on the spirit that they're picking up around them. All they are is a tool, but they can just be read too.
That's a good point. Is there anything else you'd like to tell the It's Rainmaking Time audience? They've listened to remote viewers, a few psychics. They have heard about the supernatural in terms of religious context. Is there anything you'd like to leave the audience with for 2015?
One of the things I want everybody out there to understand is that maybe my gifts is, you know, slightly more honed in than what yours may be, dear listener, but we all have it. We absolutely all have it within us. We have psychic abilities. We have highly evolved intuitive senses. Just start listening.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have been talking with, learning from, and listening to Sandy Camera. And you can reach her at sandycamera.com. Sandy, give out your phone number in case people would like to have a session with you. How do they reach you in Spain? And also, please give your Skype handle.
In Spain, it would be internationally at 0034-604-212-079. You can also reach me at sandycamera@gmail.com. I'm on Facebook under Sandy Camera. And at Skype, it's clearseeing11.
Clearseeing11. Thank you so much for being on the show. I appreciate it. God bless you. Happy New Year to you. I hope that 2015 is a fantastic year for you and all the listeners. It's Rainmaking Time.
It's Rainmaking Time.